likelihood. I don't want to say it's the game, but it's pretty darn close. But Derek Coleman, a fullback, flanked out to the left. Ryan rolling to the right. Ryan in trouble. Ryan flips one into the end zone with a prayer, incomplete. Jalen Mills covering.
Unbelievable. Biggest play of the game. Julio Jones falls down.
He falls down and they flank the fullback wide to the left.
Look at this. Jalen Mills, who has come so far here in his second year, he falls down. Now watch Julio going to get it up. Ryan still wants it and they can't.
You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work for Inside the Pylon, follow my draft and fantasy work for BreakingFootball.com, follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. As always, I'm joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow his work at those two places I just cited, but follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K, Ben. I'm kind of flustered because, oh my God, that Vikings finish, was that one of the craziest doggone things you've ever seen? How you doing, brother?
Yeah, strong start, Mike. It's going to be a good podcast. Yeah, that was some. And it was funny because I was, you know, I was running through my head, 25 seconds left, you know, two timeouts, whatever. And I'm thinking about it. And I said, all right, you're in a dome. Kai Forbath just hit a 53-yarder. He's feeling himself a little bit. So I put it out there. I said, okay, you got one timeout. So you can still work the middle of the field. Let's say you get the ball to the 43. You call your timeout and you got one play left. 60-yard field goal or Hail Mary. What are you thinking? And I put the poll out, highly expecting everybody to be more on the field goal side of things. And yeah, most people were. And so this, like, while this play is happening for the Vikings, and I'm not surprised they were working the sideline. It made sense. But while that play's happening, I'm in total field goal mode, right? That's where my head is. No. instead, what's going to happen is an incredible catch by Stephon Diggs, firstly. Secondly, Keenum was, from what I saw from the end zone view, Keenum was pretty late to that throw. So that was they flooded that area, right? And the intermediate route, I'm not sure who it was, got a little bit too far deep. And so he had already shut down that window. Like, you know, there was Marcus Williams.
Muddied the routes, exactly.
Yeah, there was Marcus Williams, the rookie safety, who missed that tackle, who was on top of Diggs, but then that corner who's covering the intermediate was able to sink back down. So small window, he was a little bit late to it, but threw a great ball. Diggs goes up and get it, and then that's just heartbreak. Marcus Williams misses a pretty routine play. You know, a lot of theories, you know, was he trying to avoid pass interference? Was he trying to, you know, make sure that he didn't get, you know, a helmet contact sort of penalty or anything like that? It was a big moment, and a rookie made a rookie play to me. Like, you know, I don't know what you read into it, but to me, that's just, you know, those things happen. Players whiff on tackles all the time. Rarely is it so consequential, and often is it rookies, and it's just, you know, it sucks that it was a confluence of enough things to lose the tackle like that. It's just awful for Marcus Williams. But hey, Minnesota, man, what a victory. That stadium was geeking, man.
That whole skull chant and everything like that, I'm not going to lie, that was some Game of Thrones stuff when they were clapping and Case Keenum was leading it. That was actually some pretty cool stuff, I can't lie. And as far as the Marcus Williams thing, man, you can't hit what you can't see. He came down flying with his head down and completely missed it. In fact, we're going to kick it over to the audio of that play right now.
Keenum steps into it. Pass is caught. Diggs! Sideline! Touchdown! Unbelievable! Vikings win it!
So, Ben, what were you doing? What were the words that came out of your mouth when that play happened and you knew and you saw that Diggs was going to score?
Well, I screamed. Like, I just, like, you know, it's like pure visceral reaction to begin with. Just like, oh my goodness, you know. It's funny. So I've been talking on Twitter pretty consistently, and I want your take on this, Mike. I know we're going to break down a little bit of Jags, Steelers, talk a little bit of Patriots as well. But looking at the Vikings now coming into town, Philadelphia, around 6:40 on Sunday. Next weekend. I've been talking a lot on Twitter saying I want the Saints, I don't want the Vikings. And there's a whole lot of, I'd much rather have Case Keenum than Drew Brees. Well, there are 53 people on a football team.
Exactly.
46 of them are active. There's a whole coaching staff. If there's anything Philadelphia fans should know by now, it's that a quarterback does not make a team.
Yep.
Obviously, Philadelphia is much better with Wentz. Obviously, Philadelphia would be heavy favorites with Wentz, and that's unquestionable. But Philadelphia won a playoff game with Nick Foles, so you can do it, right? Case Keenum, and that was with Nick Foles, who up to that point had turned in 1 out of 3 good games.
Right?
We should say 4 out of 9 good quarters. Case Keenum has been playing great ball for the Vikings for I don't know how many weeks. It's been almost, what, like 12 or something? It's been like 3/4 of the season. And he's played well enough that he's fended off people when they came back healthy. Bridgewater came back healthy, has not seen a starting snap. But Bradford was healthy today. He has not seen a starting snap. This is more than just like, you know, riding a hot hand. This guy's playing starter level football for a competitive team. So you can't draw that parallel for me. So I wanted the Saints. You know, people are saying they'd rather Breeze over Keenum. The Vikings are a significantly better team. They're more balanced, best defense. They have the front seven to hang with Philadelphia. I didn't want the Vikings. So once the Vikings won, my first reaction, and I tweeted this out and everybody got very upset with me, and this is what I want your take on, Mike. I said, that was worst case scenario for Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I would have preferred the Saints eking a victory, right? People said 17-point comeback. Yeah, a 17-point comeback that they then lost the lead on, and they had to go back and kick a field goal, and then defensive stand where the Vikings were kind of pushing. Like, what if the Vikings had a Hail Mary shot, right? That's not like a big win for the Saints. That's a sigh of relief sort of win for the Saints, right? You scrape by against a worse Saints team, in my opinion. Instead, you've got a Vikings team who you can't ride a bigger high, in my opinion. You know, people say you can't bring a high like that onto the road, or, you know, I've heard they're in a letdown spot, and I hear that. Like, this is different from a betting perspective. You would call this a letdown spot. You know, they're going to be emotionally charged. They're going to be favorites on the road. They're going to be thinking about a home Super Bowl. I hear all of that. I thought it was worst case scenario for Philadelphia. I want Diggs to drop that ball. I want him to get tackled in bounds. New Orleans comes to town. I think that's the best case scenario. That was my first thought.
Yeah. So here's how I see it. And we documented the third down struggles for the Eagles. And I'll just start off by saying this. The Vikings are the greatest third down defense of all time. I say that without hyperbole. That's fact. They only allowed a fourth of third downs to be converted this year. 15% in their last three games heading into the playoffs, and they also allow the least points per game in the league. And Ben, I've said this before, but it's worth mentioning again. Their defense isn't as stout on the road. So, I mean, okay, so I'm going to put a silver lining on this before I go into the rest of it. They allow 6.5 more points per game, shooting up from 12.5 at home to 19 on the road, from 55 yards allowed on the ground per game at home to 112 per game on the road, which is middle of the pack. And I'll be the first to say that I don't put too much stock in single-year splits, but even if that moves the needle just a little bit, if it plays a small but noticeable factor and it keeps the Eagles hanging around until the fourth quarter where anything can happen, and then you got to have faith that this is absolutely a winnable game. And hey, we talk about mental toughness, and this is something that I wanted to talk about with the Vikings because this is what really scares me about them, right?
Mm-hmm.
We overcame the loss of Jordan Hicks, Jason Peters, Darren Sproles, Carson Wentz. The list goes on and on. We all know that. But that's not to say that this Vikings team hasn't charged through some of the same tough times either, because the Teddy Bridgewater deal was tough. And at the time when it happened at practice, you had half the players praying and half the players cursing their brains out. That was their Wentz. And I'm not making a one-for-one comparison talent-wise between, you know, Bridgewater and Wentz, but he was their franchise quarterback at the time. He helped them reverse their fortunes and made them a playoff team. Obviously, that got derailed momentarily by the Blair Walsh shank. But then you deal with Sam Bradford and his knee, and he goes down after looking the best he had looked as a pro, in my opinion. You lose your brand new bell cow back in Dalvin Cook after 4 games, their second round pick. He averaged 4.8 yards per carry, goes down with an ACL. So they start Case Keenum. I mean, this was his Foles year, basically. He had 22 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, not quite as good as that one Foles year, but still, he's completing passes at a 68% rate. Along with that defense, they're able to work through all the noise, the tragedy, the doubt, and then work through blowing a 17-0 lead in the playoffs, and with almost no time remaining, complete a 61-yard pass in the playoffs for a walk-off win in the most dramatic fashion that you can imagine. Like, this team has dealt with it. These are two heavyweight fighters, Ben. The Vikings are no joke. The Eagles are not either. And of course, there is some extra motivation as the Eagles enter at 3.5 underdogs. Ben, this might be a slugfest. Yep. I can't wait to experience it, man.
No, that's going to be crazy. And that's the thing. I expect two very, very, very motivated teams.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the Vikings, I don't know. If I'm in that locker room, I'm turning around to all my brothers. I'm turning around to all the guys saying, yo, we're God-touched, man. There's no way. Like, like everything. Right? That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, we are meant to do this, yeah. Right? We are meant. New stadium. Super Bowl in the home stadium. Like we are. That's never been done before. No team, Michael, that had the potential for a home Super Bowl has ever gotten past the divisional round.
Right.
Three teams have gotten into the wild card round, won it, and then lost in the divisional round. Vikings won in the divisional round and in such extraordinary fashion. One of the most passionate fan bases. It's really, really incredible. And so, yes, I fully believe, you know, some people say trap. I think Minnesota's going to be incredibly motivated. I think Philadelphia's going to be incredibly motivated. And here's the kind of the mechanism behind that, you know. It's easy to just see, like, you know, CBS opening cuts and, like, you know, big, you know, fanciful, like, speeches and whatever. To me, it's coaching. A well-motivated team is typically a well-coached team.
Yes.
Because a coach knows how to control the narrative and control his locker room. Also, you have the veterans in there that help you as well. I'd say, given what you just saw where the Steelers lost to Jacksonville, well, non sequitur there into the AFC side of things, where the Steelers more talented than the Jacksonville Jaguars, more talent on the field probably than the Eagles, the Vikings, the Patriots, and the Saints, lost. They aren't very well coached. Mike Tomlin is pretty good, but Todd Haley is pretty poor, and Keith Butler is pretty poor, in my opinion.
Yep.
Not very well coached. I would say right now, three of the four in the playoffs remaining, that's the Eagles, the Vikings, and the Patriots, are the three best coached teams in the NFL.
I would agree.
Right? And so that's why I'm very excited for this Eagles-Vikings matchup, because us looking at it as analysts, we might get deep down to the nitty-gritty of you know, splits from Roden away, and I can talk to you about Case Keenum outdoors versus indoors this season, you know, whatever. The fact of the matter is, these two coaches will have their teams ready to execute excellent game plans sculpted for the opponent. I'm so excited to watch it. It's going to be a very, very fun game, I think, on Sunday. But yeah, Jacksonville and the Steelers, man, I my dream Super Bowl right now is Eagles-Jags. I think it'd be so much fun. I really do. I love watching Jacksonville play against those Steelers.
That's two chirpy defenses getting at it. Like you said, man, the Steelers, they're in a dogfight with bad teams all year long, like the Colts. That's poor coaching. They lost to the Browns in the 21st century. That's poor coaching. I mean, there's no excuse for that. In the 21st century, there's no excuse to be in some of these dogfights that they've been in. Their offense is so incredibly talented. They let up 42 points to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Blake Bortles looked like a competent quarterback. I don't know what you're doing at home to let that happen with you when the offense is getting some stuff done. It's incredible to me. And like you said, you're not going to see that with the Eagles. You're not going to see that with the Vikings. The Eagles had some sloppy play, recover from it, and move on. Uh-huh. And look, dude, another part of it for me, for the Vikings, that says that, you know, we're God-touched, like you said. All the shanks that they've had, Morton Anderson, Blair Walsh in the playoffs against the Seahawks, right?
Yeah.
Kai Forbath hits a 53-yarder to put him ahead. I really, really thought he was going to shank that. Like, that would have been peak Vikings, you know what I mean? But you know, it didn't happen. And look, let's talk about the AFC since we transitioned there. The Patriots, 35, Titans, 14. Patriots cover, which I called on last Thursday's show, because the Patriots since 2013 have covered more than any other NFL team in the planet, on the world. I mean, can the Jaguars compete with the Patriots?
Yeah. Here's what's going to take. And I was just talking about good coaching, controlling narratives, motivating your team. If Doug Marrone is legit, that defense is going to come out with the mentality of, we are going to expose Tom Brady, and we are going to show the world that he is done and that Seth Wickersham was correct. Like, that's what I would be trying to tell my defense. Like, listen, we found a chink in the armor.
Yeah.
Let's murder Brady. I want 6 turnovers. I want 3 points max in garbage time, right? Like, the only way I see Jacksonville hanging, because there's no way that offense is scoring 10 points in Foxborough, is if the defense comes out with a... And the Jaguars' defense has been pretty historic as far as against the pass goes.
Yeah.
They'll need to come out and be otherworldly.
Here's what's interesting to me. Two things happen with that Jaguars defense in this game. One is they pressure Brady and they get to him quick, and they do what Miami did to the Patriots on Monday Night Football, and they are able to get him off rhythm, and that offense doesn't look nearly the same. The other thing is the Patriots start to chip away early. The Jaguars defense gets frustrated. It's a new situation for them. They get real chippy and they start making stupid mistakes because this Jaguars defense, man, they're juiced up, but they seem really immature and prone to being taken advantage of mentally. Would you agree there?
Yes, no, absolutely. And that's why I wanted the Jaguars against the Patriots. And don't tell my family, because my family is mostly Steeler fans. I wanted the Jaguars against the Patriots because the Jaguars are such a high variance team.
Right.
Like, the Steelers against the Patriots are, the Steelers are probably not going to win.
Right.
They got the closest they were going to in the regular season, and still the universe colluded against them.
They'll rush three again, and it'll be the most frustrating thing in the world. And we'd be like, why did we believe they had a chance?
Right. To the narrative point, you can have Jacksonville coming in there, and they can put in an otherworldly defensive performance and fluster Brady. But Brady's also the sort of surgeon that will really, really piss off a defense like that, right? Taking what he's given, not making the small mistakes that they can capitalize on and so forth. There's a way Jacksonville will be able to pull it off. Again, they'd have to be very well coached. Any team that's going to go beat Brady has to be very, very well coached, especially in like a playoff game, a championship game. That's what it comes down to. But man, I don't want... No, that's false. I do want to be on the internet when Blake Bortles beats Tom Brady in a playoff game. That'll have to be a top five internet moment of all time. Like, for every meme made of Blake Bortles, for him to beat Tom Brady in the AFC Championship game. And hey, I will say, it does bear mentioning that Tom Coughlin is a member of this Jacksonville team.
The sadness, the peripheral sadness from the New York Giants fan base, which is in, I don't know if you see their Twitter and their fan base right now, but they are in complete turmoil. To see Coughlin go and do it again against Belichick, obviously that's going to be the narrative pushed all week, Coughlin versus Belichick and all that stuff. But man, that would be absolutely insane, and I'm here for it, man. I'm here for craziness.
The solution to Blake Bortles all along was a crotchety 85-year-old man. I don't know how old Coughlin actually is. Just a crotchety, angry, defensive-minded 85-year-old executive vice president or whatever he is. Tom Coughlin takes bad quarterbacks, and yes, I called Eli Manning a bad quarterback, and makes them Super Bowl contenders. He's got the touch, man.
I follow Jeff Darlington. He actually was my high school news editor. He works for NFL Network now. He was in the press box with Tom Coughlin, and he was saying, man, I really wish Tom Coughlin was mic'd up right now. Because apparently when they went up 21-0, he goes, you would think that Tom Coughlin would be happy and like high-fiving and all this stuff. And he said, under his breath, he is murdering this team, this Jaguars team, even though they're up 21-0 for all the boneheaded mistakes that they were making at the time. I'm like, that's peak Coughlin right there. That's amazing.
Tom Coughlin is so angry. It makes me so happy.
All right. So Patriots, Jaguars, we covered that. Eagles, Vikings. We are going to get into for the entirety of the week. It's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. We're going to dig into some tape. By the way, go to LockedOnEagles.com. I just posted the article for the G lead that the Eagles used on fourth down and goal. LeGarrette Blount with the go-ahead touchdown in the second quarter. Broke that play down. It was beautiful execution. Brandon Brooks showing why he is a Pro Bowl guard. Ben, what else we got going on, man?
Right. So it is a preview week for the NFC Championship game. I don't know if you heard, the Eagles are hosting the NFC Championship game. Kind of a big deal, city of Philadelphia. Also, apparently Vikings fans travel pretty well. So if you're in the Philly area, you got some work to do. We got to fill up those seats.
That is not, there's Vikings no way.
Vikings travel well.
Go ahead.
If the Eagles were one game away from a Philadelphia Super Bowl, they could be playing the championship game on the moon. Your boy would be there, right? Especially when it's a home field advantage like Philadelphia's. I'd be doing anything to get to that game, just to try to negate something. Take one seat away from a home team guy. But anyway, this has been Locked On Eagles. Man, only four Locked On podcasts staying throughout the year now. Only four remain, and they're four real good ones. Locked On Patriots with Mark Schofield, who's a big friend of the podcast. Mike's boss over at Inside the Pylon. Fantastic podcast. Mark does great work. Locked On Jaguars is hosted by Zach Goodall, and he's a friend of the podcast as well, Mike's adopted son. And then also Locked On Vikings, who we'll be having on for the Wednesday crossover show. That's Sage Rosenfels, who's an ex-Vikings quarterback, actually, and Sam Ekstrom. Three Locked On podcasts that remain besides Locked On Eagles. Thank you so much for listening. I am, as always, have been Benjamin Solak on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. Michael Kist on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. On whatever app you listen to your podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe. We're sticking with you the rest of the way as Philadelphia paves the road to Minnesota and Super Bowl 52. Of course, Mike and I will be at the Senior Bowl next week following the championship games. So depending on the results of that game, you'll either get a week full of Senior Bowl content or a week split nicely down the middle, some Senior Bowl content, and obviously 2 weeks of prep before the big game. Thank you so much for listening.
Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.
That's a championship game, Kaka. Oh, what a feeling.